Well, we are so glad that you're here this morning and chosen to worship with us. I'm kind of excited about today because we're going to get to hear a little bit about our mission team that went to the Dominican Republic. I don't know about you. Have you ever been given an impossible task? I mean, have you ever been assigned something at work or maybe, you know, I remember when I was a kid, some of my chores seemed impossible, mainly because I didn't want to do them. But sometimes we're given things in life, right, that seem so difficult, so complex that, you know, have you ever had something happen to you like, oh, I can't do that? How am I ever going to get that done? Some of you guys are going to look at the syllabus for the year. And when you sit down in class and you go, how am I ever going to get that done? It seems like I have this impossible task to get done. How am I ever going to be able to do it? One of my favorite movie series is Mission Impossible. And when I was a kid, it was a television series. Any of you remember that with Peter Graves, right? As Agent Jim Phelps, you know? And every week that Jim Phelps, he got a new mission, and it was going to be an impossible mission, something that was very difficult to accomplish. And he would listen to his mission, then he would go sit down with his file folder. That's how old it was. Everything wasn't electronic one day. We really had paper. And so he'd look through his file folder, these pictures of all these IMF agents, and he would choose a team based on what he needed to get this impossible mission done. He would choose a team with all their different skills and their abilities, and they would take these covert missions against, you know, all kinds of evil dictators and organizations, and even towards the end of that series, crime lords. In the current film series, Agent Ethan Hunt, he chooses from a bunch of agents as well, but they have names like Luther and Benji and Jane. In the television series, if you remember, I mean, they had agents like Cinnamon and Willie and Barney. I mean, not the very coolest of secret agent names, but they took these impossible tasks. And these missions were so hard. They were so hard, as a matter of fact, that when they were given these missions, you know, in the old series, it was like a reel-to-reel tape recorder. When they were given these missions, they were told that if they were to be caught or killed, any member of their team, the secretary would disavow any knowledge of them. Like this is so hard, you're probably going to die. And when you die, we're going to act like we don't know you. And so it's like, and who is the secretary? Anyway, I always wondered that. But anyway, and then of course, what happens? The tape self-destructs. As followers of Jesus, we are sent on impossible missions, things that are too big and too hard for us to do. God chooses from names like Ross and Dana and Amanda, And he sends us into the world to do things that when you think about them, when you consider what God wants you to do, it's like, there is no way I could ever do that, God. You have got to be kidding me. There's no way I could ever share Jesus with that person. God, that's impossible. God, do you know what that person's like? Have you been them? Nobody likes them at the office. I could never love them with the love of Jesus. That's impossible to do that, Jesus. There's no way I could ever forgive that person. That's impossible. There's no way I could tithe and give sacrificially. I can't afford that. There's no way I could teach that class. There's no way I could serve in that capacity. God, that's an impossible thing for me to do. I'm just not up to it. God all the time is asking us to do impossible things for him. God all the time is sending us on impossible missions in our life. He's annoying like that. I mean, think about it. He asked Noah to go build a 400-foot boat in the middle of the desert. And as far as we know, Noah didn't have any previous boating experience. He asked Moses to go up against the baddest, the meanest, the greatest dictator, Pharaoh, that was known in his world. And you know what he sent him to do it with? A stick. Impossible. He asked Hosea to marry not just an unfaithful woman, but he asked Hosea to marry a prostitute. And that's just some of the impossible missions in the Old Testament. When you get to the New Testament, Jesus is still giving his disciples these impossible missions. And there's one in Mark chapter 6. Jesus and his disciples are trying to get away. They've been exhausted. They've all been out doing things for God. Jesus had sent them out, and they'd come back and told him some incredible stories of how, you know, God had used them in different places. And so they're trying to get away from the crowds. They're trying to get some rest. So they get in a boat, and when they get to where they're going, they found that people had followed them. And then we'll pick it up here in Mark chapter 6, verse 34. Jesus saw the huge crowd as he stepped from the boat, and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. And late in the afternoon, his disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place, and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go eat at the nearby farms and villages and buy something to eat." And Jesus said, "You feed them." And they're like, "With what? I mean, we'd have to work for months to earn enough money to buy food for all these people. How much bread you got?" Jesus said, "Go and find out." And so they came back and reported, "We have 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. And Jesus told the disciples, "Have the people sit down in groups on the grass." And so they sat down in groups of 50 or 100. And Jesus took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and he looked up towards heaven, and he blessed them. And then, breaking the loaves into pieces, he kept giving the bread to the disciples so they could distribute it to the people. And he also divided the fish for everyone to share, and they all ate as much as they wanted. Everybody got full. And afterward, the disciples picked up 12 baskets of leftover bread and fish. A total of 5,000 men and their families were fed. Jesus gave his disciples an impossible mission. You go feed them. You take care of them. 5,000 men and their families. I mean, it had to be at least 15,000, maybe 20,000 people they're trying to feed. I can't even begin to imagine. I imagine they looked at that and went, "This is too big. This is too much. This doesn't make any sense at all. It's unthinkable that we should be able to do this." And yet they accomplished it. How? How can we accomplish the impossible missions that he gives to us? How can you actually do the things that God calls you to do? This summer, our church took on an impossible mission to go help renovate a building on the Dominican Republic Seminary campus. It's going to be part of the Center for Missionary Formation. From this center, men and women who are called to ministry from all over the Mesoamerican region of the Church of the Nazarene, which, by the way, is 31 countries, people who feel called and led into the ministry in 31 countries will be trained to be pastors and church planters and evangelists from this center. I mean, it's something to have a huge impact. And God said, I want you guys to go and help with that. Us? I'm like going, me? From Topeka? How in the world, how can we have an impact in spreading the gospel in 31 countries as a church? No way, Jose. Well, that's what I... There were Jose's there. So anyway, no way, man. That's an impossible mission. But that's what we did. Avery Moore put together a video for us this morning. I want to show you of some of our trip. And while you watch this, the mission team's going to join me on stage this morning. Go ahead and show that.
This morning, saw a world full of trouble. Now I thought, how do we ever get so far down, and how's it ever gonna turn around? So I turned my eyes to heaven. I thought, God, why don't you do something?
When I was on my way there, I did not want to see the devastation and the sadness, that because I couldn't fix anything. So I just wanted to go do my job that I needed to do to help, and that was it. God wants me to look closer at people, at things around me, even though it might hurt or be uncomfortable.
Yeah. I created you. If not us, then who? If not me and you, right now. Well, it's time for us to do something. Now then when will we see an end?
us to do something.
Everybody put out their best. Everybody worked hard. Everybody was there for the same thing. And it all worked out.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, like, it was an amazing experience. I mean, that's the number one thing that I can say when people ask me, they're like, how was it? And I was like, it was amazing, because it was. It was just so infused with God and His mission for us.
One of the things we experienced was a lack of tools and comforts that we were accustomed to. And I just had to let it go and know I'm the tool for God in this situation. What we consider a challenge is not.
It's time for us to do something. Yes, it is.
Getting to know people better in talking and building relationships with them.
What I enjoyed the most was just like that relationship with each other. I mean, whether we were up on the roof, like throwing buckets of concrete and stuff, you know, working as a team, I mean, it was very team orientated.
The relationships that we built with people that we didn't necessarily know was so important.
Right.
I feel like we can build on that with, you know, Pastor talks about building community here, and I think we can build on the team that went to the Dominican.
It's a tough world out there, and we just have to do it together, and if we just live separate lives, it doesn't work.
Yes. Okay. This is our impossible missions force up here. And none of them. Nobody's named Cinnamon. So anyway, but I want to have them, you know, we got really used to, if you saw in there, we got used to passing buckets. And so we're going to pass a microphone now. It's similar, just don't throw it. Okay. I'm going to just have them introduce themselves real quick. I'll give this to you, Max, and I'll go down the other end.
Max Nervous.
Donette Streeter.
Amanda Pasolio.
Emma McDaniel.
Shelly Green.
Dana Green.
Matthew Chenoweth.
Ross Hurst.
Wayne Dirks.
Madison Snavely.
Sean Snavely.
Libby Snavely.
Alisa Snavely.
Are you guys related or something? Okay. Outside, we do have three of our members that weren't able to make it today. We had Wayne's brother and his wife went with us, and then also Amanda's husband, Pace. If you saw a large tree trunk on the video, that was him. And so, but he's unable to be here today with us. One of the, you know, when we went on this trip, Becky Dirks organized it, got everything going at the last minute. She couldn't go, and so her husband, Wayne, stepped in to lead us. He was our fearless leader. And if you don't think that's a big deal, you ought to try checking in 17 people onto an international flight and find out differently, especially when their pastor can't keep his passport. But anyway, Wayne, would you step up here for just a second? I wanted Wayne to just kind of describe to you a little bit about what our mission was while we were there.
Well, related to the project itself, in other words, the work of the construction, we were trying to remodel a house that was on the campus and had not been used for several years. It had been looted and everything taken out of it. Plumbing, electrical, everything had been removed by vandals. So the idea was to rebuild the house and make it a residence for people living on the campus And while the project of the campus being built, it would also serve as a dormitory for those people that would be working there. It was a single story, rather small house, and so they decided that the way to expand it was to build a second story. So that's where we worked. We did all of our work on the second story. We poured concrete for floors, walls, columns, and things like that. That's one piece. The other piece was that they were getting ready, getting to the point where they were going to be needing cabinets for kitchen and bathroom. And so we were also involved in starting that. Ross, who has some experience building cabinets, headed that piece of the project up so that they could get that started. And as other teams came down, then they would finish the cabinets when they were, and hopefully by the time they were ready to install them. The third thing we did was there was a fence, chain link fence, going around the house, and it had been overgrown with trees and bush and so forth. And it was part of our job to remove that. Quite honestly, I'm thinking that was more work than the concrete work, and you know how much concrete work, how hard that is.
She worked
a lot on that. So that's what we did.
Good. Thank you, Wayne. Appreciate it. Well, they're going to help me preach the message this morning. And because we experience the same challenges that Jesus' disciples experience, and we experience the same challenges, basically, you and I experience that every day when God asks us to do something. So how do we do the impossible things that God called us to do? And there's four principles from the scripture that I want to highlight for you. First of all, you've got to be able to see the need. In the story, the disciples recognize that these people are hungry. They recognize they've been out there for a long time. They're going to need something to eat. It's a remote location. There's no McDonald's. There's no Wendy's. There's no Fuzzies. And so they've got to find somewhere to go eat. And so it's getting late. And you can imagine that many people trying to find, you know, something to eat somewhere was going to be a pretty big deal. And so, you know, they were very concerned. They saw this need that the people had. Accomplishing any great mission that God has for you requires you to have your eyes open to a need. I think one of the people on our team that exemplified that most was Shelly Green. Shelly, will you come up here for just a second? I think when we first went, you know, one of the reasons you went was to kind of get a different view of the world, wasn't it? You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it was definitely out of my comfort zone because I didn't want to see, like I said in the movie, someone hurt or violence or, you know, all the devastation that some of those countries experience. So in a way, I just wanted to go help construct everything, be done, and get out of there. So I tried really hard to not do that. I tried really hard to keep my eyes open, even if I might see something that's uncomfortable. And I was doing really good the first couple days, but then Sunday morning came around that just kind of...
Tell us about the trip on the way to church that you saw something that... which, by the way, Dana made you sit in the van always up at the front looking at everything, right?
Right,
forced you to do that.
I don't know. He says that he was just being, like, polite. Let me go first.
Right.
But I always had to... And they had curtains, and I tried to cut them or shut them a couple times, and then Dana would open them. So I had to look. And Michaela kind of warned me that when you go... to different cultures that you can get overstimulated because you're trying to see so much stuff. So, okay.
But tell us on the way to church, though.
On the way to church, I was just trying to see buildings. I wasn't trying to see people. So cars, stuff like that. And I just happened to see all these people were standing around talking just like normal, and there was a girl that was laying on the ground, and I saw a gentleman take a plastic yellow bag, and he covered her, and I thought, oh, well, that's nice of him. She must be taking a nap, and it really wasn't the case, and I stopped, and he covered her completely and patted her head, and I remember looking at AJ, and it's like, what was that, and why did that happen, and what was that? What did I really see? He goes, I don't know, I didn't see it. And then it hit me. They were just standing around like that happened every day. And I know I struggled writing to church because all I could think about was that person that was no longer. And so that was difficult because that was exactly what I didn't want to see. And why second day, and I had a whole rest of the week to make it, you know, because I didn't want to see that. It hurt. It was uncomfortable. I couldn't fix it. There wasn't, you know what I mean?
But then what happened when we got to church?
So we get into church, and they're already praying. You walk in, they're kneeling down expecting great things to happen in church. And I still had it in my head, this poor young girl, how can they be joyous? How can they be happy? And we get to this service, everybody is just so energizing and hopeful and happy. And I'm thinking about this girl. And so I'm kind of checking myself. Wait, they have the hope and the joy of the Lord. Nothing can harm them and nothing can get in their way. And there's hope in devastation. There's hope in destruction. And
no matter, when you got all kinds of bad things going on, that they could look up and they were looking to God and keeping their eyes fixed on Him despite being in some incredibly difficult situation. How's it changed the way you look at people now?
Well, it's getting better. Because I still don't like to see stuff. I just want to do my job and just, you know. I don't like to see pain and hurt, but it's all around us. And so I kind of dig my heels in a little bit deeper, and I intentionally slow down. I intentionally take a second to look, because what I also learned is you can notice, but you're not seeing. You can notice somebody's in church with us, but you're not really seeing them. You're not really grabbing a hold of, hey, how are you today? Hey, yeah, I noticed they were there, but, you know. So I picked that up. Like, I need to take more time to be relational. I need to take more time to help and things like that.
See people.
See people, yeah.
Thank you very much. Yep. Give her a hand. Wayne, too. Let me ask you something. How long has it been since you really saw? Since you really looked and were willing to see your world differently? How long has it been since you were willing to see somebody else differently? You got to be willing to make yourself open to that, like Shelley talked about. Because in order to embrace the mission of God, we've got to be able to see around us the needs that God puts in front of us. You have to be willing to see people through His eyes. You have to get beyond our narrow perspective, and we have to have our eyes open to a need. That's what the disciples were doing. That's what the team tried to do. Secondly, here's another one. Be willing to be part of the solution. So the disciples say, hey, here's a problem. Send these people away so they can go get themselves something to eat. We see the need. Let them go meet the need themselves. We don't have enough, you know, and Jesus says, no, listen, I'll tell you what I want you to do. You know what I want you to do? You fix it. You meet their need. Let me give you a good illustration of this that I've already experienced in my life this weekend. Our grandchildren are here for a whole week. I've really enjoyed being a grandparent up until now. We'll see next Sunday. But anyway, but it's like Braden, our 1.5-year-old grandson, he's still in diapers. And so it's one thing for me, like it's easy sometimes to see his needs, like, or to smell his needs. It's like, oh no. Woo! I'll tell Lou, it's like, you know what? He needs a diaper change. It's one thing for me to recognize a need. It's another thing for me to go change him. Yeah, that's... My wife really loves this sermon so far. So anyway, but you know what I'm saying? Our church, we had to send $10,000 from our church to fund this mission project. Matter of fact, this whole mission project that Wayne was describing to us, there's not a penny coming out of World Evangelism funds. They're building it all from churches like us who send a work and witness team over. So we send $10,000 for the materials and the things that we were going to use while we were there and to help fund the project. And all of these people that you see up here had to raise over $1,000 apiece to be able to go. Not only did he give up vacation time, not only did he give up family trips this summer to be able to go on this, but then they had to raise the money, $1,000 apiece. This was no easy thing. To be part of the solution is not always an easy thing. And sometimes it requires sacrifice. It requires change. If you're gonna affect 31 Central American countries in the Caribbean, you have to give something of yourself. I want Max Nirbus to come up here for just a second. Max, we went on this trip and we talked about pouring the concrete. Why did you want to go on this trip?
Well, I felt a call from, years ago to help do my part and fulfill the Great Commission, spread the gospel. And so I feel like it's part of my duty to just participate in missions of some way.
You hadn't really had some opportunities before, but now, right. Now you had the time, and God put his finger on you and said, go, Max, go.
That's correct. Whenever they announced that, that we'd be going on this trip, I thought it hit me that, this is my opportunity. I'm a teacher. I've got my summers off. Actually, we had the money. We could do it. And so it hit me that, maybe this is my opportunity. And then, of course, and I said something to Elisa about it. And immediately I started thinking of reasons why I couldn't go, because there was plenty of, I really shouldn't, But Elisa was like, no, you're going. That's it. You know, if God's calling you, you're going. And so.
Isn't it awful when your wife gets on board with God?
Yeah.
And no choice, man, all the time. So we're going on this project. Did you know anything about working with concrete?
Absolutely nothing.
Did you know that you and I were as out of shape as we were?
I had a suspicion about that.
About me. You probably had a lot of thoughts about me. Right? But do you speak Spanish?
No.
Yeah. You and I, we don't have time to tell, but we had an interesting encounter at a Taco Bell. But anyway, it's horrible. But anyway, you went anyway. Since you've been home, though, this has impacted you in the way you're a public school teacher.
Yes.
And how has this impacted you in the way that you feel like you need to do something here?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the church service and the workers that we met and interacted with. But I really felt like there was the language barrier. There was only so much communication I could have with them. And I really hadn't I hadn't tried to learn any Spanish ahead of time. My son had called me and told me how to say, where is the bathroom, because he knew I'd need that.
But very important.
Other than that, I hadn't done any preparation, and I kind of felt bad about that when I got there because, I just wasn't able to communicate with these people as much as I wanted to, and they were also children of God, and I really felt like I was missing out on an opportunity there. And then I thought about my students. I have several Hispanic students in my classroom that I haven't really tried to learn their culture, their language. And it hit me that, I'm not doing all I can to not just, but to be a good teacher and also to be a good Christian. And I need to learn this language. So the first day after getting back, I started learning Spanish with a little app on my phone. And so I don't know much yet. Don't test me on it. But I have learned a few words.
If you know where the bathroom is in Spanish, you can help.
Do that for sure,
all
yes.
All right, good. Thank you, Max. I appreciate it. Give Max a hand. Most of us, while we were there, did things we'd never done before. For me, it was manual labor. No, I've done that before. But you should see Emily throw a pickaxe. I mean, and I believe she could work her grandpa Rooks under the table in a heartbeat. Emma, I'm sorry, I'm in the mode here. Emma, Amanda, if you tell Amanda she can't do something, she's going to do it. A matter of fact, all the women, you saw Lisa throwing these buckets around and everything else. I don't mean to be improper, but the women were beasts on this trip when it came to work. I mean, it was very impressive. We were all doing things we had never done before, but God called us to do that because you know what? It wasn't about our skills. It was about our heart. Listen, when God calls you to do something, it's not about your skills. It's about your heart. It's about the willingness to do whatever. You throw 17 people into very small confines at night in the house that we were in, working together for the first time for 9 days we were gone. And you got to have a willing heart to do whatever it takes to get the mission accomplished. And that's what it's going to take for you. It's not about what you have or you don't have. Another thing you've got to have is you've got to be able to trust God. The disciples were overwhelmed by Jesus' demand, and they're like, you got to be kidding me. We can't do that. We don't have, it'd take a whole year. We're underfunded. We don't have enough money. And Jesus says, well, what do you got? Well, we got 5 biscuits and 2 fish, which is a number 2 meal at Long John Silver, okay? So it's like, you know, and he says, well, here, give it to me. And he took it, and he blessed it, and he says, you go give this to the people. Huh? So many times when God gives you a mission, you feel underfunded, don't you? Some of you feel underfunded every week when you put your offering in the basket, on the plate. We feel underfunded when God calls us to do something. We don't have the capabilities to do that. My resources aren't enough. And that's when you have to rely on God. God says, give me what you've got, and I'll do incredible things. Sean Snavely, come up here for just a second. Sean had a remarkable skill whenever we went down to the Dominican, because he's worked for years in concrete. And so, you know, we're just happened to be doing concrete, which was an incredible thing. And so, in terms of the concrete work, can you tell them for just a second a little bit about what we were doing?
Everything's concrete over there. There's not a whole lot of lumber to work with. And so they build primarily out of concrete, cinder blocks and stuff like that. And we were doing, while we were there, they'd done some cinder block walls and they'd fill it with the concrete. And then on the top of the second floor, they had already poured the roof, and we needed to cap it just to dress it up so that they could put their water tanks on top, which is what they used for. They didn't have hot water heaters. It just, you know, they showered with the heat of the sun. And so we went up to pour that. And it was entirely different than anything I'd ever done in concrete.
How was it?
When we were going, the only thing I'd heard so far was that we were going to be doing cabinets. And I am not a trim carpenter. And so when I saw that we were going to be doing concrete, I was like, oh, all right, you know, something I can do. But it was wholly different than what I was used to, the techniques and the tools. When I would do concrete here at home, I had, you know, 12 tools in my arsenal that I would use on any given project. And here we had 3 tools, and they were all the same tool. And the steps that we did, back here at home, you did steps 1 through 10. There you did 1 and 10, and the rest was all combined.
Yeah. Was that really hard for you, especially given your experience and knowing, like, how this ought to be done and you're having to do it differently and all? What was that like?
Yeah, I had a hard time letting that part go. There was points where I thought, we are cooked. This concrete's going to blow up on us. It's not going to happen. And then, you know, I just powered through, and Dana, you know, was up there on his knees with me, and I thought, we're not going to make it. And then 5 minutes later, we got this. God's got this.
How was it for that for you? For that was a spiritual growth point in a way, like going like, because you're used to getting it done right, and you have certain standards, and here you're having to do something differently. It's a lot of trust.
Sure. Yeah, it wasn't. I had to just think, I'm the tool in this situation. This is for God, not for me. I just got to relinquish control, and, you know, he's got it.
Yeah, cool. Thank you. Appreciate it. You know, Madison's headed to Emporia State for college this week. She's leaving, so be praying for them. I don't know. Libby's like, yeah. So anyway, but that's what sisters do. But now they asked you, right? They said, it was up to you since you graduated from high school, where do we go for family vacation? And you said, let's go on the mission trip. Do you know you'll never get to pick family vacation again? Probably. But I have a lot of respect for her saying, I want us to do this as a family, and all 4 of them going and being part of the trip. I think that's absolutely awesome. There are so many times when God calls us to do something that not only will you not have what it takes, but you won't be able to control it. And sometimes in your mind, you know, I was a part of planning a church. I didn't know anything about planning a church. About half of it I made up as I went along, you know, because And it wasn't always the way we planned it and always what we wanted to do. But there's an element of trusting God, and there's so many things in the church. You know what keeps us sometimes from doing what God wants? We don't have the perfect plan yet. Or we don't have all the resources. And God, when you send all the resources, when you lay out the perfect plan, and I can do it up to my standards. But what Sean just told us is a reminder of what the disciples said. Just give me what you have. And I don't know if those two little fish and those five loaves, you know, tasted as good as the best restaurant. Probably beat McDonald's, because that's not hard. But, somebody got a spiritual point today. It's good. No, but you know what I mean? It may not be perfect. It's not always perfect what we do in the church. And you can't always wait for the perfect time. Sometimes you just got to go use it and trust God that he'll give you what you need. And then he'll put the things in your hands that you need. And then he'll work through. And like Sean said, that you're the tool that God wants to use most of all. Here's the last principle. It takes teamwork. Did you notice that Jesus doesn't hand out the food to the crowd? If I was Jesus and I took two fish and I took those five loaves, those five biscuits, and I blessed them and we're going to pass them out, I want the credit. I'm passing out all the food. See what I did? See what I got? See what I got? Nope. You know what he did? He didn't pass out anything. All he did, he gave it to the disciples to pass out. He put it in their hands and said, you guys, you got to go out. And they had to work together to accomplish that purpose. God rarely calls us to do impossible things alone. In the Impossible Mission movies, they form a team. He usually puts a team around us to do what we do, because there's no way that we can accomplish his mission without a team and without working together. Pastor Nicole talked about that a little bit at the last of our movie series last week. Dana, I want you to come up for just a second. You talked a little bit about some of the teamwork. We heard it a little bit in the video, and then some of the other things that you were talking about. In what ways did you see us function as a team, and why was that important?
Well, when we first started, in doing what I do, you work with guys that kind of, and Sean, what he does, you work with guys that kind of know what's going on. And so you take steps and you get things done.
You
know,
you about to take a shot at me?
No.
Okay. All right.
You did a great job of killing that grass. So we were doing this work, and you know, some of the guys that Sean would work with and I would work with in kind of construction probably don't look like these people up here.
Oh, he's a shot at all of us.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. All right.
I mean, you know, we have a whole different type of people here, and so we were working, and it got really frustrating, because there's easier ways, there's faster ways, there's safer ways, rickety old wooden ladders, man, they're like, oof. But anyway,
right, because we had some people that they had a work crew there that were locals,
right,
that you were working with as well, and they're doing things,
and they're on this stick ladder over a stairwell, and I'm thinking, not a chance am I doing that. But anyway, it got kind of irritating, because we were all trying to get this job done, and sometimes it felt like we just kept bumping into one another. Things were happening. Buckets were getting dropped on heads from the second floor. I was scared for Max's life there, but it got really irritating to me, and I had to just kind of back off for a minute, because I was getting to the point of getting mad, you know, because people weren't paying attention. Well, we made a few changes, and things worked. And then throughout the whole trip, we'd had a bunch of people that didn't have a clue, me included, I've never done concrete, of what was going on and how things were to happen. But yet, we just did it. We just kind of worked with one another, we worked with each other's skills, and we were patient and just did it, and it really worked out.
Even working with some of the guys who we didn't speak the language, but trying to connect with them and be a part of their team was...
Sure, they you know, those guys had a plan. They didn't have anything written down. they didn't have a blueprint or anything to go on. They just had a plan right there. And it was up to us to kind of decipher what was going to happen that day. You know, AJ helped us out. Hey, this is what we're going to do. But none of Jose, Simone, none of those guys could say, I want you to go here and do this and get this done. It wasn't going to happen. So, yeah, there was that whole communication barrier was pretty big.
One of the things you and some of the team did, though, at lunch, though, you guys were over there talking to them. You were over there kind of finding out their story, kind of teaching them a little bit of language and trying to learn a little bit yourself and found some ways to communicate. In the end, it was building those relationships, really, that made it more, made the team able to function.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we, you know, those guys, we had guys there that were from, they were from Haiti. And so they're pretty discriminated against in the Dominican. So we sat around at lunch, you know, Shelly and I and some others, and kind of talked with them. And they were really interested. They wanted to learn English. They wanted to know about us. And there was one of them for sure. He was like, why do they want to know about me? Why do they want to know my language when it was Creole was what they spoke? But they wouldn't hardly speak it because they were ashamed of it almost, you know. Everyone else spoke Spanish. And this guy asked Chelsea, he said, why do they want to know my language when they have the beautiful language, English, you know? It's like, so she had to explain to him that it was more of we wanted to know him, not the language. We wanted to know him. We wanted to get to know him. So we made a lot of connections like that. And those guys really, you know, they really grow on you. I mean, even though you can't speak to them, you can't really hold a conversation. You get a relationship. And then, of course, with the whole team, you know, we all come from different backgrounds. We all have different likes and dislikes. But yet, wow, everybody got along so well. Everybody worked so well together, and it was just a really good experience.
Thank you, Dana. Thanks, Dana. You can't have teamwork without relationship. That's what I just heard. You got to have relationship. You got to get to know people. You can't work together until you get to know people, until you embrace one another, until people matter, not just the language. You know, one thing I found out about a bucket line is that when you're in a bucket line and you're passing all these buckets, all it takes is one weak link to slow it down. Most of the time, I was the weak link. And so, or if somebody stepped out of a line, it would take us a little while to adjust because you're dependent on everybody. It slows the work down. And here's the thing. In your area of service, when you don't do your part, it makes it hard on the rest of the team. It slows the work down. It means that if you don't take a part, you're making it hard on everybody else. And it's true when you struggle to serve. It's true when we worship together. It's true in our community groups. It's true when it comes to giving. When you don't give, you slow down the work and you make it hard on everybody. And you may have noticed in the video, you know, Elisa said that working as a part of a team makes a big difference. Wayne talked about a little bit about our better understanding. He talked, when we would meet together, he talked about our understanding one another better, and you've heard that a little bit from everybody. Ross worked on the cabinets, and he had a little team down in a shed away from us. We really don't know what went on down there, but Ross was training some people in his little team, and we were talking before service. They had a new video they put out to show it, to saw all the work that they'd been doing, and they have cabinets. Ross didn't get it done while he was there, but he trained the team, and the team is building the cabinets now, and Ross's work is carrying on because it takes a team to get things done. Often, God gives us the resources to meet the needs of others, and listen to me, Fairlawn. God's not going to, if you pray for our community, God's just not going to drop it out there, whatever they need. You know what he's going to do? He's going to put it in your hands, and he's going to put it in my hands to give out to those in our community, just like he did in this story. And we've got to work together to be able to do that, just like we heard. Let me kind of bring this home. The night that Michael Jordan scored his career-high 69 points against the Cleveland Cavaliers, a reporter asked Stacey King, Oklahoma grad. I knew you'd like that, Lyle. He was a reserve center for the Bulls. He played 17 minutes that night, and he scored 1 point on a free throw. And the reporter asked him, "What will you tell your children about the day, this day, and about this game?" And Stacey King said, "One day I'm going to tell my kids about the game that Michael Jordan and I scored 70 points." I can only imagine that this impact this had on the disciples' life about them accomplishing their missions. Don't you think they probably talked about that day again and again? About the day that me and my buddies and Jesus fed 5,000 men plus women and children? I think it probably changed them. I think it's changed us. Whatever we accomplished and whatever happened there wasn't about us. And it's not just about our skills, but it's about what God did. I want to pass the mic, and if you haven't spoken yet, or if I want you to just maybe take a minute and tell us how this has changed the way you live right now. And if you're shy and you don't want to speak, that's okay. You don't have to speak. But just real quickly, how's your life different because you went on this trip?
It made me feel very small. I mean, I'm kind of a take charge person, very type A, get out of my way. And none of that worked here. It was a team thing, so it just made me come back to reality that I'm just very small in the scheme of things.
I think for me was the starting working and swinging the pickaxe. Like, that was really fun, and it was hard work, and a lot of my job here is a lot of mental exhaustion. And so at the end of the day, it felt good to be physically exhausted. And so, and that was the whole reason we were there, was to work hard and, make a difference for God. And that was my mentality, was, that's my goal. And so just bringing that home for me, within my daily job and, going to work, not to get done, clock in and out, is just to come and keep working hard for the Lord and make a difference daily, not just for the week I'm in the Dominican. So.
Great stuff. Oh, Emma. Is it because I called you Emily?
I ate more pineapple.
Matthew?
One of the things that I truly felt like that entire time that we were there was just not only the people that we had, but every single thing, every event, whether it was those long, hard days where we were completely exhausted, throwing buckets or digging up bushes or whatever, God was there. And luckily, I got to go because I didn't want to go either. I was like, whatever. I've been wanting to do a mission trip supposedly forever, but God finally said, "You're going." And when I came back, God is in my life every day. I take and put it out there to everybody every day. And actually, I'm planning my wedding and talked to my DJ, and he's also a pastor, and he was like, "What are you planning to do?" Because he's starting a church, and I was like, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, "Because you're anointed. You're out there. It just shows on you." And so that helped me realize that maybe I'm really doing what I say I'm trying to do. So just, definitely show God, be that beacon for everybody. So.
First of all, it was a real pleasure to get to know everybody on this team a little better. Some of them I knew they belonged here, but that was about it. And I feel like we're fairly close friends now. I grew up in the Midwest. I spent my whole life in the Midwest. I had never been in a third world country. I was definitely out of my comfort zone. And it makes me appreciate little things like flush toilets, water you can drink, electricity 24/7. And it makes me really admire our missionaries that go out there and spend their lives in those conditions.
I've learned to be more selfless with my time and energy. Going to the Dominican has taught me a lot of things about relationships and how they're really important.
Me too. That's the thing I took away from it most was I need to be more generous with my time. Had been pretty stingy with it, and I'm working on it now. I was the last of the four of us, I think, to really get on board with the sacrifice and the vacation, because we've been doing some pretty neat stuff.
And that happened on the plane down there, didn't it?
Right.
It took that long.
But we're, you know, I'm the better for it, for doing this.
I learned to be more appreciative of everything that I have.
From this trip, I'm trying to be a better steward of what God's given us. I feel fortunate just to have been born here in the United States and have all the opportunities that we have, and I owe that to God.
Well, yeah. I want us to pray in just a moment. And here's what I want to ask you. What impossible task is God calling you to? Is there something that he's been trying to speak into your life, something he's been asking you to do, and you've kind of been holding out on him? Are you willing to see your world and with fresh eyes, to see the needs that are around you? Do you have a willing heart? Maybe you don't know how you're going to do it, but do you have a willing heart to say, God, I'm going to trust you to provide. I'm going to trust you to get me, to help me do that. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I know you're calling me, and I'm going to trust you. Are you being a good teammate with the team that he's put you on? Let's bow our heads for just a minute and talk to him. Father, I am so grateful for the help of preaching this sermon this morning. I'm so thankful for what you did in the lives of the 17 people that went on this trip, for the way you worked and moved in us. They have reminded us today that we can do impossible things for you. And God, I just ask right now, would you help us open our hearts today to you? Would you just ask God, God, what do you want me to do? What mission do you have for me? What is it that you want me to be involved in? What things are you calling me to do in my community, in my neighborhood, in my church? God, give me fresh eyes. God, I want to see the world the way you see it. I want to see people around me. I want to see the needs around me. And God, give me a willing heart. Lord, sometimes I put a lot of obstacles up. And this morning, Lord, I just want to take all the barriers down. Wherever you need me, whatever you want me to do, are you willing to pray that prayer this morning? God, use me. Here I am. It's like Isaiah, here I am, send me. Use me. What do you want to do through me, Father? I know I may not have much, but all that I have I give to you. I put myself in your hands. I put my meager resources and abilities in your hands, and I'm just going to trust you. Help me to trust you. Help me to depend on you. Even when things are out of my control and I don't know how they're going to happen and how the need's going to be met and how it's all going to fit together, God, please help me to trust you and help me to be a good teammate. Help me to get in there with others, Lord. Get to know others around me. Get to know people. Connect with people so we can accomplish the things that you have called us to do. I'm so grateful and thankful that you haven't called me alone by myself, but you've put people around me. Will you help me, Lord? Be a good teammate. God, I believe the best days of Fairlawn Church of the Nazarene lie ahead. They may look different than the days in the past, but that's okay. The mission may be changing and the world may be changing around us, but that's okay because you're unchanging. You have everything that we need to be the people, to be the congregation, to be the neighbor. You have everything that we need to accomplish everything that you call us to. May we have a willing heart in the days that are ahead. May we have a deep, deep trust in you. And may we work together to see the kingdom brought to light and to life in Topeka and around the world. We love you today and we give ourselves to you in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. I'm going to ask you to stand. I'm going to ask the mission team to stand. I'm going to have the mission team exit stage left. While we sing one more song, the praise team's going to come back up. This song is a great song. We sung it at the end of service last week, and it's a great thing. Now, the mission team's going to go out and hang out in the foyer. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to go thank them for representing us. I want you to thank them and say, I am so glad God sent you and not me. And I want you to thank you for representing us. Talk to them about their experiences. Ask them about, you know, questions that they have or some of those videos. That spider got passed around. That's a whole story. But anyway, but I want you to talk to them. Thank them for going and being a part of this and tell them how much you enjoyed them speaking. It's a lot to set up here. It's a lot to share. Man, it's pretty intimidating and poppy right now. So anyway, talk to them, speak to them. They're going to be out there in the foyer for you to talk to and thank. We're going to be putting the video you saw on our Facebook page. Thanks to Avery for doing that. He's also doing some testimonial videos that we'll kind of put out here gradually over the next 2-3 months on our Facebook page and also on our web page. And so anyway, we're going to sing this song. This song says, "Let me go out and represent you. We're the change that the world is waiting for." We'll sing together and then be dismissed. Have a great week this week.